Catherine, thanks so much for being here. Catherine Matthijs is the founder and CEO of Civility Partners, a strategic organizational development firm that helps create respectful and positive workplace cultures. Civility Partners, born out of Catherine's personal experience in a toxic environment, has successfully served a diverse clientele with its comprehensive consulting, training, and coaching services. Her clients range from Fortune 500s to government, nonprofits, and small businesses. Catherine is also a speaker and author. Her award-winning book is, and I love this, Back Off, Your Kick-Ass Guide to Ending Bullying at Work. Catherine, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience, and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis.
Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. I've been very much looking forward to this conversation, and there's so much to get to about your expertise and your sage counsel. But before we get into the work that you're doing, I find this so remarkable that you are not just an employee in a toxic work environment yourself. You are being bullied while you are head of HR. Now, that's incredible and sad. But if you don't mind, I'd love to hear about how that can happen.
Yeah, sure. There was another individual. He was my peer. We were at the same level. We both reported directly to the president. We were on the leadership team together. And he was a bully. And so I was on his list, and he definitely attempted to micromanage me. If I wasn't in the office, people would tell me he was wandering around trying to ask people, where is she? You know, just kind of all in my business, even though it was not my manager. And then, as HR, I was dealing with the costs that he was creating in the organization. So I saw firsthand the turnover, lots of people in my office complaining. I spent a lot of time complaining to a different person on the leadership team who could see his behavior, but was not a target. So she had a little bit different perspective. So yeah, it was exhausting, quite frankly.
And so it sounds like, and is often the case, you weren't the only one that he had targeted.
Right.
And can you describe what his behaviors were? Obviously micromanaging, walking around. Was he also kind of aggressive? Was he berating people? Was he talking down to people? How did these behaviors manifest themselves?
Yes, he was very condescending. I felt even to the president. We would be in staff meetings and the president would say something and he'd kind of, and it's like, that's weird. He was responsible for operations. And so that micromanaging really extended into, if you didn't dot an I and cross a T, then he would berate you about how you're breaking the rules. And he was very much a rule follower, which I find people who engage in bullying are. And so they're so rigid that there's just no inflexibility. A funny story, he was responsible for office supplies. And so if you wanted an office supply, you had to go to his office and request it. And then it was often met with, what happened to the Rima paper I gave you last week or whatever? You're just like, can I just get my Rima paper and go back to my office, please? So, just real controlling. I remember, too, he would, you know, we had a lunchroom, and if you were in there, he would walk in there and it was very clear. He'd kind of roll his eyes at this person. Oh, hi, how are you? Over here to this person, and just very clear who he did not tolerate.
Yeah. And what gave him license to do so? Was he, because he was a rule follower, was he saving the company tons of money, or was he tight with the CEO? Like, what power did he have that gave him license to treat people in this fashion?
The same power and license that everyone in that who engages in that behavior has, which is that the leader led him. So no. The president. Kind of background for this particular situation, he had been there longer than the president, actually. And so maybe there was some sense of, I don't know if I can function without this individual, but he was totally replaceable. He wasn't, you know, and they're often allowed to behave that way because they're seen as really valuable. But he wasn't a sales guy. He wasn't bringing in a bunch of revenue. He just managed his area with the tight leash. And apparently my boss thought that was important. So that's the answer. He could.
Yeah. And he did. Obviously you're trying to protect other employees in the role of head of HR, but what was the effect of this behavior and this mismanagement style on you?
You know, over time, I started feeling like, you know what, if the president doesn't care about the way that I'm being treated, and he doesn't care essentially when I go and say another person in this guy's department's leaving, you know, and the president was actually a nice guy. He was in a lot of ways a great leader. He had some great skills. But with this particular scenario, I just started feeling like if you don't care about how people feel, then why should I care? And it started affecting my performance. I definitely was depressed by the I worked there for 5 years and I found it really hard to get out of bed. And I just really was like, I don't want to be here. And so then I was finishing up grad school. And I was trying to let me just graduate from grad school. And then it's a good segue to like, why am I looking for a new job? But I couldn't get there. My performance had just suffered so much that my boss actually came to me. And like many people who are bullied, I was the one who was let go. So he came to my office and said, what's going on with you? And I said, I burst into tears and I just found myself giving a 30-day notice. And he said, if you're that unhappy, you should probably just leave today. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That is heartbreaking. I've seen that happen more than once, more than yep. I care to admit. Yep. I'm so sorry. Was that the impetus to get into this work that you're doing now, which we're going to get into, or were there other steps involved?
Yeah. So I left that job, obviously, realized how much it was bothering me. I didn't know, you know, obviously I was depressed and I knew it was affecting me, but the real change in my perspective came after I left and realizing, wow, that was really wearing me down. I was still in graduate school and I was studying workplace bullying specifically in grad school because of this situation at work. So as wow. depressing okay. as it was, I was sort of fascinated by it at the same time. Why yeah. are there 49 people here and we all let one person rule this place? So there was yeah. that. I was still in graduate school. I went on to get a job at a startup tech firm who had just gotten an investment and was going to be building. And so I was going to build their HR. And then the recession hit in 2008 and 2009 and I got laid off. So that was the impetus. I went home from being laid off, opened my laptop, bought a website and started Civility Partners that day.
Well, that's great. And I have to admit, I'm not one of these people that's like, everything happens for a reason and it's always better on the other side. That may be true for some people, but I don't always say that something good comes out of a difficult situation, and that it certainly doesn't make it right, you know.
Right.
That you're able to survive it, you're resilient, and you've moved on to doing some great work in this arena. But I think it's so interesting, you know, now that you're specializing in coaching abrasive leaders, and I want you to comment on this quote that I saw from you, which is, you're dealing with those highly valued leaders whose management style scares the masses. Wow. And it's true. You just alluded to it, that this one person, and now I'm not in a bullying circumstance anymore. And I look back on it and I'm like, why didn't I stand up more often? Why did I, you know, I was a valued employee. I was a good employee. I was devoted. I was in television and in media in New York City. Looking back on it, I can't fathom why I didn't say, you know, cut it out. I did it once in my career. I won't get into it, but it's really hard for us to, and it's also, I felt taboo. It was usually the CEO of the company, mm-hmm. but it was also taboo, almost like trying to start a revolt. It's very dangerous to start talking to people saying, you know what, we should band together against the CEO or the number two. So tell me about your work with, you know, management styles that scare the masses.
Like, I don't remember that quote, but it was a good one. So what generally happens is HR is aware of me because they're dealing with a leader who's bullying and they've found a webinar or something that I'm talking about that. And they're trying to get the CEO to address the behavior. And the CEO is saying, don't you dare. They're valuable. Can't people just suck it up? I know my boss used to say, well, that's just how he is. They need thicker skin, that kind of thing. And then there's usually some sort of catalyst that finally causes the CEO to pay attention. So, sometimes it's finally someone filed a hostile work environment complaint. And then the CEO realizes the risk there. I've coached somebody where it was the seventh hostile work environment complaint was the straw that broke the camel's back. Or somebody else quits who's also very valuable. So it's they're often forced into it at first. And it does take a bit for me to really talk to the CEO about, look, they're not just going to up and quit if you ask them to be respectful. It's okay to have that conversation. You're their boss and you'll be fine. So in a way, it's weird how I'm coaching high level people with CEOs who have accomplished so many things and they're scared to death to hold this person accountable. But it's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And well, in my experience, it usually was the top person or the number two was very close and in, you know, simpatico with the number one. So, and I was in television in New York. And I wish some of the companies that I work for had availed themselves of your services. It would have saved me a lot of pain. But having said that, how often do you find that the bully, and it could be a he or a her or a they to be appropriate about it, I mean that sincerely, you know, have you seen them become contrite? And how do you begin that process if they're even willing to do it?
Well, so I basically, I spend some time sort of coaching the CEO who to give them some information about how to present the coaching so that the messaging is essentially, you have to change. I've allowed this too long. I found you a coach who's going to support you. I expect change in the following ways, and I do require a consequence. So this, everybody's forced into an ugly uncomfortableness, at least ugly uncomfortable for them. But they have to do it in the name of the company and saving, you know, you can't function this way. So when they first meet me, they're definitely a little, you know, they're trying to figure me out. Am I going to villainize them and that kind of thing? And then what I do is interview 15 people who work with them. And then I take all that data, I move it all into themes and show them the data. So this, now it's not HR saying I'm getting complaints and it's all hearsay. It is, I interviewed 15 people and they all agree that this is how you're perceived. And I'm going about answering your question in a bit of a long way, because what I notice is when I share that feedback with them, they're often very appalled. So there's been a handful of people I've coached where like, I don't care. I don't care, you know, but those people I can't coach. Most of the time they're like, holy moly, I knew people thought I was tough, but I didn't know it was this, and they want to change.
And is it difficult? Because again, in my experience, you'd be very, very concerned about being on the record that the boss was a bully or that he or she was aggressive in an inappropriate way, in a way that was hurtful and all those kinds of things. Now, if you have a group of 15, I suppose you can do that. But even if I was one of 15, I'd be concerned that he'd know, or the bully would know, that I was one of those that was criticizing them.
So actually, I get 10 of the names from them directly, and then I get 5 names from HR. So I have 5 confidential add-ons. So the person I'm coaching actually makes the email introduction to say, I'm going to get coaching. Can you talk with Catherine? And, you know, we do get that sometimes, but because I move all the data into themes and, you know, we remove things that could help them understand who said what to the best of our abilities. So what they get back is a, you know, here, theme number one, you shame people in public, and here's the comments from people, and they're just bullet points, you know, sometimes 3 to 5 words. So they're not going to really understand who said what.
Okay. And in these conversations that you're having, can you give, and I'm certainly not asking you to name names or companies, and I know you do that anyway, but can you give us an idea of the of a real world experience that you've had with one of these? I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So this one is a kind of easy one to explain how coaching works. So this individual, one of his themes was that he has a pretty good ego and he needs to slow down on the ego. And that in that theme, people talked about how he name dropped a lot. His cousin played basketball with a famous person, you know, and so he'd bring it up. And He was very like, I don't ever sit still. I never sit and watch Netflix. That's stupid. You know, so he was kind of shaming people in that. I'm so amazing. And so in coaching, we talked about how is he building rapport. He said, well, every Monday morning, I have a, you know, we have a meeting and I started off with, what'd you all do this weekend? And nobody ever talks. So, you know, they obviously, I don't know what their deal is. And so coaching is actually really focused on fight or flight. So then I say, well, is that fight or flight? It's flight. They're not speaking. Well, flight tells you they're in defense mode. What are they defending themselves against? Why are they in flight mode? And he proceeds to say, well, you know, they probably know that I'm not like whatever they did that weekend isn't as awesome as what I did. And they're competing with me. And they're, I mean, just his view is so skewed.
Yeah.
And so then I said, do you think that's why they don't talk? If this is your feeling about it. And he, yeah, I can see that. It's like, maybe you need to ask a different question that's not about their weekend and try to get build rapport in a different way. And obviously you need to stop putting down people. And we, you know, people who sit on the couch all weekend watching Netflix, maybe they're depressed or they have something horrible going on, or maybe they're super into movies. Like you can't. And so through processes like that, where then he starts to take in the strategies for that Monday morning meeting and try different things, and then he can start to figure out what's going to work. So I can give one other example.
Sure.
It was right towards the end of coaching. This was Joe in a, he is IT. Joe is one of my superstar students that made a complete 180. But we talked about how similarly in meetings, people didn't tend to really speak up because one of his themes was that he shames people. And so this was a really good indicator to me that he had graduated essentially from coaching. So we talked about, you know, what are you doing in meetings that people are afraid to speak up? And he said, you know, a lot of times I go in and I sit at the head of the table, even if it's not my meeting. I probably shouldn't sit at the head of the table anymore. It's not my meeting to run. I was invited. Okay. And they said, a lot of times I notice I get up and I'll write on the whiteboard and then I kind of stay up there. And that's a power position. I should probably sit down. And so that was like, okay, you're picking up on these subtle things all by yourself. And that is a sign that you're taking this in and you're getting it. So those are some examples.
Yeah, it's nice to see that it can be done, that there can be self-awareness and maybe even contrition, you know, for making people feel bad about themselves.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the effect you're having on the bully targets. Your book, Back Off, Your Kick-Ass Guide to Ending Bullying at Work, does provide real-world advice. So what kind of advice do you have for bully targets when they're in the throes of working for one of these bosses that you're dealing with and they're experiencing trauma?
Yeah. The key to resilience is to make the decision to take your power back. And so I'll share a different book that I have. It's a collection of stories. It's called Stand Up and Speak Out Against Workplace Bullying. I asked people to submit stories about what made them successful in getting through a bullying scenario. And what I notice is as they all tell this story about being bullied, you know, their mental health is going down, their product, you know, the story is going downwards. And then there's this moment where they hit a rock bottom or they just decide I'm over it. And then the trajectory changes. And so that, in my mind, just based on those stories, is you really have to decide this is not okay and I'm not going to do this anymore. Now, that could mean quitting. It could mean deciding you're finally ready to talk to HR. One person, her story is basically she decided I'm going to stay here and I'm going to protect everyone else and I'm going to fight this fight even until I die, you know, but now she has power. She's kind of like, bring it on. I'm going to fight you.
Yeah. For her, it's not easy to do, but that's what you need. You need someone like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of joke. She was the Martin Luther King of that organization.
Yeah.
She's willing to take it on. The other piece of advice is recognizing that HR is only empowered as much as the CEOs empowered them.
Yes.
So I know there's a lot of stories of going to
Big
HR
point.
And nothing happened. But recognize, much like me, I was trying to solve it and I couldn't get permission to. So Be prepared when you go to HR that it's not that they don't want to help you or they don't care, that they may not be able to help you. And so in that vein, being very prepared to set the HR professional up for success. Don't go in there and whine. You got to go in there and say, here's what happened. Here are the facts. Here's what I've seen it cost our organization. Here's what I suggest for. So set, you got to set them up for success and come armed with everything they might need.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough thing to do if it is the CEO or the number two. And there's got to be somebody at HR who can take a stand, who has some power, which is difficult. Some of the places I worked didn't even have HR departments. They were startups or media companies that were growing and no one was going to take on the CEO. But I do think that that's something to try, at least as one instance. In my case, and I think this is true for a lot of people, I'm curious what your experience is. You know, I loved the work. I was in journalism. I loved storytelling. I loved having my staff. I loved being at the center of things, you know, whether it was politics or sports or science or the economy, whatever it was. So I loved the work and I didn't want to let the bully win. And so, but I made the mistake, I think, in retrospect, that I kept just trying harder and trying to do better and get more viewers, get better Nielsen ratings, you know, with all that kind of, and it's not going to change the behavior, it seems to me, over time. And then it just became a battle of resilience. You know, could I stay at it? But that's not the healthiest way to address these things, I don't think.
No. And I mean, I get that a lot. You know, I speak to HR conferences all the time and inevitably someone in the room raises their hand and says, my CEO is the bully. Can you help me with that? And the advice is leave. You know, HR, there are some HR folks who can help. You know, I've seen it where maybe a CEO is rough around the edges and an HR professional has the right relationship with them to help temper it. But if you feel like it's not going to change, you got to go. Because, and that's what I was saying before, I thought I was managing it. I mean, I knew my production and I was not happy, but was like, I can get through grad school, graduate, and then I'll leave. But obviously I wasn't doing that. So, unfortunately, and it's not they're winning. If I quit, the wins, right? It's some, that company's going to go down in flames probably. Think about it that way.
Yeah. I mean, it was a number of things. First, you feel so alone. I think so many bully targets feel so alone. And it affects your home life because if you have a good home life, there may be sympathetic people, but they can't change anything for you. Yep. And in my case, I was trying to protect my staff from it. And so, and I was a boss myself. So I thought, this is what I asked for.
Yeah.
I came to New York to do television. Television's tough in New York, like we talked about. And so therefore you gotta say to yourself, well, what's wrong with me? Why am I attracting this behavior?
Yeah, the good news is that I think things are really changing with the younger generation coming up in the workforce. You know, I think about you and I, we didn't have anti-bullying programs, not even an assembly about it, you know, and at the very least, schools have assemblies, if even more, where they're really addressing bullying in big ways.
Yes.
So I think the younger, and now we can go anywhere. You don't have to go be, you know, you don't have to apply for a job that's in a 30-mile radius of your house. So I do think things are changing over time, whereas our generation, it was, you just put up with it. What's wrong with me? Toughen up. So that's the good news. I don't want it to be too far the other way, though, where, you know,
no,
it's snowflake thing, but, you know.
Right. You make each other with respect. You make a great point. I mean, so many schools now have a zero tolerance for bullying in their school. Mm-hmm. And yet we don't have that in near enough places in the workplace. In fact, you talk about one of your, I guess, goals or in your consultations and your coaching, you want to make it comfortable for people to be vulnerable at work, which I think is a really wonderful notion. Is it possible? And are you seeing that as something that as you're working with organizations that people can be vulnerable as opposed to again, our generation and young, and that is like, you're supposed to be stoic and take it and be tough and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think we're headed in the right direction because technology and work, you know, it's not work-life balance anymore, where before you go to work and then you could hopefully shut off some of the thoughts about the bully and get home and be with your family. Now you got emails and everything. You know, I'm in Starbucks before I even get to the office on my phone, you know. So I think with integration, and it was one of the silver linings of COVID, that now we saw inside people's homes and we're more forgiving if somebody, I mean, really, if somebody's like, sorry, I can't come, my kid's sick. Before it was like, ugh, we have kids, together. And so I, you know, and when I say more vulnerability at work, I'm not saying we should all be sharing all of our deep, dark secrets, but just being able to relax and talk about how you feel. And I mean, I think it's possible because we do it at Civility Partners. So, you know, I'm the first one to be like, my brain is full. It's 2 o'clock, but I don't have anything left. I've got something going on at home that's distracting. I'm going to leave. And my team, you know, obviously within reason, but we're pretty open here about what's going on in our lives. And so, yes, I think it's possible.
All right. Just quick answer, if you would, because we're running out of time here. Is remote work and Zoom meetings helping this or hurting it? And maybe it's evolving now that we're through the pandemic for the moment. But I thought maybe workplace aggression and psychological harassment might recede some because, people are running down to the office and getting in people's faces. But what's been your experience in terms of how often this stuff is happening? And is it just as bad with remote work as it is when people were in the office 5 days a week?
It is, because if I'm firing emails off to you, I'm less empathetic because you're not in my face, right? Uh-huh. So it's so, and we're moving so quick, it's so easy to fire off a Slack message that may not be taken well by the recipient. So I think it's not going away. We've got to pay more attention when we're communicating on Zoom and in Slack messages.
Yeah. Well, amazing insights. I've gotten so much value from talking with you about this stuff, and I know anybody watching will as well. So I really appreciate all the insights that you've provided, Catherine.
Thank you.
And you have an offering for some of the folks watching.
Yep. So I'll give you, we have 16 scripts for stepping up and or being an ally. So some options for things to say in the moment or shortly thereafter. I'll also provide my ebook on coaching people who bully so that you can get a little more insight into that. And I want to share one last thing.
Please.
It's easy to villainize the bully and feel like it's intentional that they hurt you. Really, most of the time, the intent is to get results. And so hopefully that just helps the paradigm shift a little bit, because if you feel like they're intentionally trying to harm you, it's a lot harder to stand up for yourself. Recognize it's not about you. It's about getting results.
No, that's a great point. I took it much too personally. Yeah. And I think oftentimes the bully goes off and does 100 other things, maybe bullying 100 other people, but it's often not really about you. It's about them. So is there a URL or email address that people can
Civility Partners, civilitypartners.com. I'm all over LinkedIn. I have 60 courses on LinkedIn Library and our e-newsletter is available via my LinkedIn. So Google me, send me a carrier pigeon, whatever you want.
All right. Terrific, Catherine. Thank you. Final word from me, bully targets and those of us in toxic work environments, let's aim to change the workplace for good. Yep. Catherine, thank you. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.